This is Chris Smith, founder of the Out of Chicago and Out of New York Photography Conferences, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. The weather is better, and if you're a freelance photographer or a small business owner, you'd much rather be out in it shooting rather than dealing with paperwork, right? And that's where the cloud-based accounting software from FreshBooks comes in. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 92. New gear rumors abound. In this episode, lots of rumors about new gear in the future, covering a presidential convention, and staying safe. Paul C. Buff releases the Digibees, Canon patents an unlikely lens, Affinity Photo gets an update, Seagate releases a ginormous drive, and yet another zoomable drone is announced. All that and more in episode 92 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Chris, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Chris Smith, as you heard, is the founder of the Out of Chicago and Out of New York Photography Conferences. He wanted to create a conference that was unlike any others out there, and he did. Ask anybody who's attended one or taught there, and they just can't wait to get back. All the other conferences are great, but there's something special that Chris and his team have captured in these. You know, when you pair incredible locations with a more intimate teaching environment and instructors like Lindsay Adler, Rick Salmon, Brian Peterson, Neil Vandykirk, and more, you really just can't go wrong, can you? Because we have such an amazing audience, I talked to Chris about giving you guys $100 off their upcoming Out of New York conference this October. Chris is a great guy, so it's no surprise that he made that happen for us. Now, this is not an ad, and no, I don't get a single penny if you guys sign up for this conference. I just wanted to make it easier for those of you that were thinking about going to this great conference and help you guys make this happen. So now you have $100 off of this thing. It's awesome. If you want to learn from incredible photographers in the city that never sleeps, head on over to outofnewyork.com and enter Sharky, that's Sharky, into the discount field. It's an amazing conference, and now you guys have 100 reasons to attend. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 92 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. As always, we appreciate you guys hitting that subscribe button, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere, and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. As I record this, we're still 2 months out from the ginormous Photokina show in Germany, but rumors are flying, and if true, there's some pretty cool stuff to look forward to. The first rumor brought to us by our friends at Canon Rumors has to do with the Canon 5D Mark IV. But that's not exactly a rumor, because we know for a fact that that body is coming. In fact, we don't even know what the rumor is. Yeah, this is the good old non-rumor rumor. What they're saying, though, is that this camera is said to feature a, quote, DSLR first, end quote. That's the rumor. Now, I have no idea what that could possibly be. I mean, it really could be anything. Do you guys have any ideas? A DSLR first. What could it be at this point? No idea. I can't even hazard a guess as to what that would be. Now, this next one from the folks over at Nikon Rumors is a lot more solid, and it's one that I've actually been hearing murmurings of for a number of months now. And that is that Nikon is finally updating its now 7-year-old 70-200mm f2.8. I have the original VR version of this lens, and it is still tack sharp and amazing. The current version is a solid lens, but it has some focus breathing issues, which hopefully they'll fix, and it'll run you $2,100 US. When the new 70-200 comes out, you can expect to pay at least that much. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they were $2,400 or so. You know, everything seems to be getting more expensive these days, and Nikon could really use the money, as we've talked about here before. I'm thinking that this lens would likely have better VR, also known as image stabilization, what they call vibration reduction at Nikon. Maybe 5 stops. You know, the current one does 4 stops. So hopefully it's got that and less focus breathing. And who knows what else they could possibly do with this lens. It is already pretty darn awesome, but those things would be really nice. One thing it's definitely going to need to do is be able to resolve higher resolution sensors because everything keeps creeping in that direction, right? I mean, after all, what is the use of putting a lens, I'm talking about in general here, that can resolve, let's say, 20, 22 megapixels when current cameras and the ones that are coming out in the future can do 50 on up? It doesn't make any sense. It's like putting cheap tires on a Lamborghini. Now, this next rumor from Sony Alpha Rumors has to do with those cool Samsung UFS cards that we talked about in episode 88. And if you believe the rumor, the upcoming Sony RX100 Mark V might be the first to make use of these. And that's not entirely unreasonable because this camera, and I own the Mark IV version by the way, is fairly small, shoots 4K video, and a next-gen memory card makes sense. You could probably put two of them in there and that would be pretty cool. Photokina, like I said, is just 2 months away as I record this, so it's going to be really interesting to see which of these, if any, materializes. Next. If you've been following the U.S. presidential race, well, to say the least, it hasn't been very pretty now, has it? As I record this, the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, wrapped up a couple of days ago, and not only were there tons of delegates, there were countless protesters and photographers as well. From those who were hoping to capture some images to put on their Instagram or Facebook and, you know, a little bit of history there, all the way on up to some of the best photojournalists on the planet. And some of them not only had their full complement of photo and video gear, they were prepared for possible conflict with helmets, gas masks, and even bulletproof Kevlar vests. That might seem extreme to some, but given the recent terror attacks, which seem to be happening weekly now, cop shootings, etc., I don't think it all hurts to be prepared to the extent that you can. Ohio, as it is here in Idaho, is an open carry state, so guns are definitely going to be present at these kind of events. And honestly, I don't think that even matters because those who are up to no good tend to not follow the law. I mean, if you're intent on doing harm, does it really matter if you have a gun showing or not? I don't think so. Following photojournalist Timothy Fadick's Instagram account alone, you can see that citizens were there with assault rifles like AR-15s and others. And while I support a citizen's right to exercise their rights, open carrying guns, let alone that kind of heavy firepower at a politically charged event like a national convention, could very well have led to unintended consequences. Now, thankfully it didn't, but it could very well have. Thus, why many photojournalists who are often right there in the mix and risk their lives to bring us imagery feel the need to take precautions at these events. That seems pretty reasonable, right? I mean, they're right there between cops and the protesters. But there's a little bit of a problem with this, and it's one that was pointed out to the Petapixel mothership by National Press Photographers Association General Counsel Mickey Ostreicher, who made us aware of a letter put out by the Society of Professional Journalists and the Radio Television Digital News Association. In that letter entitled Banned Items at 2016 Political Conventions Hinder Journalists' Jobs and Safety, it says, quote, "Particularly, we are disappointed that government officials in Cleveland have remained steadfast in their ban on gas masks in the event zone. It is understandable that the list of prohibited items contain items that may be used as offensive weapons or may pose a threat to public safety, but we believe that those news organizations wishing to protect their employees and individuals desiring to protect themselves from exposure to airborne chemical agents while covering the news should be allowed to do so." End quote. Other banned items include backpacks and bags, which are larger than 18 by 13 by 7 inches. So that includes many bags out there that photojournalists would carry, of course. Now, personally, as a former PJ myself, I'd roll with my ThinkTank Photo modular belt system with everything I feel like I'm going to need to get the job done and still stay fairly nimble considering the sheer number of people that could be around me. You don't want people pickpocketing your gear, you know what I'm saying? In fact, I'd make some calls to my buddies and have a conversation about what they're bringing, what I'm planning to bring, and talk about safety concerns. Being a photojournalist is a solo job, and we love that about the profession, which is kind of slipping away. But when it comes to big events like this, most are going to touch base with their buddies, see where they're staying, and talk shop. Everyone wants to come back in one piece, so safety is definitely going to be gone over. My friend Zach D. Roberts co-hosted the Around the Lens podcast, which is about visual journalism, was in Cleveland covering the convention, so I reached out to him while he was there and asked him how he prepared for the event. He told me that he touched base with fellow photojournalists that he knew would be covering the convention, and while he had his helmet, gas mask, and Kevlar vest in the trunk of his car since the Ferguson riots, he didn't plan on donning any of them. Not only does my former profession pay worse than ever, it's also dangerous. But guys like Zach don't do it for the money. Clearly, right? They don't even do it because they're thrill seekers, because it's not about that. They do it because it's an important job which needs to be done in a free society. And we should all thank them for that. You know, it's all about bringing these events to you and telling a story the best way that they know how, often in a single frame. And sometimes it can be really, really dangerous. Now, thankfully, this convention was pretty tame out there on the streets, but you know what? Zach loves the streets. Ask him. It's where he works best. Next. As many of you know, I pay $50 a month for that whole darn ball of wax known as Adobe Creative Cloud, and that includes Photoshop and Lightroom, of course. But as I've said here for months, Lightroom is so darn slow, and I just don't spend much time in Photoshop anymore. Not if I can help it, at least. For those that want options, there are a bunch out there, and one of them is Affinity Photo. As you may recall, this program launched in 2015, and version 1.5 is out now with some pretty cool updates. One that many will appreciate, especially if you do HDR, is their advanced HDR merge, which produces full 32-bit linear color space images, as well as a new workspace for tone mapping your HDR images. Tone mapping is where a lot of people go really cray-cray on their HDR. A lot of people need to seriously dial that back. Those that hate HDR hate it for that reason, because it is too cartoony looking. But if you like that, go for it. Art is art. A feature that I think is really cool and something that many are in need of now because the technology is more progressed than it was before is a new way to edit 360-degree images. I mean, you hear about 360 like crazy these days, right? If you have one of the 360-degree cameras that are out there, you're definitely going to enjoy this feature in the 1.5 update. The really cool thing in this update, though, is the new focus stacking features that let you combine multiple images to achieve a wider depth of field. That's something that my friend Don Komareshka does a lot. He stacks a bunch of images together and produces those amazing snowflake photos that he's famous for. Also in this update is the ability to batch process photos, as well as create macros that let you record an action or actions and replay those on a photo or a set of photos. Affinity Photo 1.5 will be available sometime later this summer. They're shooting for the end of September, they say. And those of you on Windows will be happy to hear that it'll soon be available on Windows as well. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. Paul C. Buff, bless his ginger soul, was an innovator in photographic lighting and responsible for who knows how many hundreds of thousands of photographers being able to get in the game without breaking the bank. Their lighting solutions are a fraction of what you'd pay for a pro photo, of course. And you know what? The lighting, close enough for most people. Buff died a little bit over a year ago now, but his company and his legacy continues on with great innovative products that are so useful for photographers. Anyone who's had a Paul C. Buff product loves it. And one of those will likely be the company's new Digibees strobes. You know, thanks to advancements in recent years, you no longer have to mount your lights and then run a cable down to a heavy pack. And like many other units preceding these, you now have that all available in one unit. That is so, so darn helpful. According to the company, quote, America's favorite flash units are back, now brighter and packed with even more features. The Digibees offer speed, accuracy, and consistency in our most compact design, increasing versatility and the addition of a high-intensity LED modeling lamp, end quote. These units are available in two output models in four different colors. Those are black, blue, red, and green. And power can be adjusted in 1/10 increments from full power all the way down to 1/64th power. There's an internal fan to keep things from overheating, of course, and the usual high-impact polycarbonate housing, a rear LCD display to see your settings, visual and or audible recycle indicators, slave eye on and off, four modeling modes, and those are on, full, off, flash power tracking and independent adjustment, and you have flash power output control, modeling lamp output, and so much more. As for power, the Digibees come in two models, each of them with a 400-watt equivalent daylight balance modeling lamp, and that is going to be so, so helpful to people. The Digibees DB400 features 7 f-stop power variability from 2.5 watt seconds on up to 160 watt seconds. It has a 0.5 second recycle time to ramp up to full power and weighs in at just 2.5 pounds. So that's not a lot of weight you've got atop your light stand, you know? If the DB400, though, isn't enough power for you, let's say you want to overpower the sun, then the DB800 is what you want to look at. It has a 7 f-stop power variability range from 5 watt seconds up to 320 watt seconds, a 1 second recycle time, which is longer, of course, because it needs to crank the power up even more than the DB400, of course, and weighs in at just 2.9 pounds. If you're already into the Paul C. Buff system, you'll be happy to hear that the Digibees are fully compatible with the company's entire line of modifiers and accessories, as you would expect. If you're excited about these, the company says they're going to start shipping the week of July 25th, 2016, and you can place your order anytime now over at their website. The DB400 will set you back $310 US, with the DB800 going for just $350. Now, if you don't consider dropping the extra 40 bucks and get that DB800, I'm going to be upset with you. Why pass up twice the power output for just $40 more? If you know that most of your shooting is going to be done outdoors, especially in the bright midday sun, and the goal is to overpower said sun, you're going to need extra power, of course. Those DB800s will get you there a lot easier. Trust me on this. I think a lot of people would regret getting the lower powered model, especially if they're shooting in the midday sun. So there's that. Next. In episode 91, I told you about a high-end point-and-shoot recently patented by Canon. Well, now the company has patented a lens which, if it actually materializes, would be quite incredible and probably very expensive. I don't know how else to describe a lens that would cover a 40 to 800 millimeter range. That would no doubt make it the ultimate walk-around lens for so many people out there. Now, granted, it's an f4.5 to 5.6, but still, that is plenty good for most people. This wouldn't be the ideal lens for shooting sports, but if you're photographing your kids' games, you could definitely get the job done with it. The folks at Agami spotted this patent by Canon, which describes four different 40 to 800 millimeter internal zoom lenses, two for full frame and two for power shot super zooms. As has been pointed out before, companies often patent things that never see the light of day, so this lens is so crazy that it seems unlikely that we're ever going to see it. There's only so much that you can do when it comes to bending light, and the law of physics are what they are. You know, in general, where can lenses go in the future? They've been getting sharper with less imperfections, and build quality has been going up across the board. But what else can they do? I mean, you've got actual size, weight, and mathematical limitations to deal with. Who knows? Maybe they've got some really cool technology coming down the pike that we've never even heard of. Gotta say, though, a 40 to 800 millimeter lens would be pretty darn cool. That thing would be pretty big, pretty fat, and pretty expensive. Next. Way back in episode 44, I told you about Seagate's 3 terabyte hard drives, which cloud backup solution Backblaze found were not as reliable as any other drive that they had in use. They failed at much higher rates. Well, now Seagate has unveiled a ginormous hard drive, and hopefully they have those issues resolved. These days, with many cameras in the 20 megapixel and higher range, storage is definitely a concern. Not just storage when you're editing, but in making backups so they're truly backed up. You do have backups, right? I hope so. Hard drives are pretty inexpensive these days. You definitely have to have your stuff backed up. And not just your photos. I mean, have you ever shot 4K video? You will fill a drive very quickly. So you definitely need a large hard drive. And that's why Seagate has announced its Barracuda Pro 10 terabyte hard drive for your desktop computer. Now, personally, a 10 terabyte drive is a bit scary, especially if you don't have an ironclad system for making routine backups. A drive like this can store pretty much everything you have, and it would make me a little bit nervous to put everything on one hard drive. That's a similar reason to why many of us shoot on smaller SD cards and use multiple ones rather than putting everything on just one card. If it fails, you're hosed. Eggs, basket, you get the idea. This new drive by Seagate is part of their Guardian series. It's a 3.5-inch drive, runs at 7,200 RPM, and has a power-saving feature, as well as a 5-year warranty. That warranty, of course, is just on the drive. You know, you may get a free replacement drive, but all your memories would still be gone. So there's that. It is up to you to back up your stuff. So you'll need 2 drives. In case you're wondering how many images will fit on a 10 terabyte drive, let's say you have Canon's 5DS. That shoots 50 megapixel images, which are roughly 80 megabytes a piece, give or take. So a 10 terabyte drive would easily be able to store 125,000 raw photos on it. That is crazy talk right there. But that's going to easily cover most people. You know, if you've got a Nikon D7200, for instance, which is what, like 24 megapixels, 20 megapixels? I don't know. I own it. I have no idea. You're going to be able to store, what, 250,000 photos on there? Crazy. If you do have a 5DS, I would be surprised if you had 125,000 raw photos, because you're not exactly shooting sports with that body. You're probably mostly doing portraiture and landscapes, and you're definitely not doing the spray and pray technique on that one. Now, as you may imagine, a pro drive of this size is not cheap. One of these bad boys is going to set you back $509 US. And yes, if you get another drive to back that one up, ouch, that's expensive. Next. In episode 90, I told you about drone giant DJI announcing its new Zenmuse Z3 aerial zoom camera. Well, it didn't take very long at all, but drone manufacturer Walkera has announced their new Voyager 4, a drone with a crazy powerful 16x optical zoom option. Now, as you may recall, DJI's is the equivalent in 35mm terms of a 22 to 77mm zoom lens. Most of the public isn't aware that drones have mostly wide-angle cameras on them, and once they find out that these things have zooms, they're going to be even more worried than they are right now. As capable as 77mm is at seeing what you're doing, imagine the one from Walkera. That tops out at, get this, 1,500mm. And that's optical. That's not digital blown-up pixels. 1,500mm. Yeah. Wah, wah. That DJI camera suddenly stumbles in comparison now, doesn't it? The Voyager 4 from Walkera features a gimbal-stabilized 360-degree rotating 1080p camera whose zoom can be controlled from nearly a mile away using a Wi-Fi network that the drone creates. Or, if you need more range, the drone is 4G capable, so anywhere you have a 4G cellular signal, you're good to go. Now, of course, battery life in drones is pretty poor still, so you're not going to be flying these things 50 miles away, so no one's going to have to worry about that yet. And here in the United States, there's FAA rules to deal with, and they limit how far you're actually allowed to legally fly your drone, so these are all things to keep in mind. Needless to say, though, now that drones have cameras which can zoom, something that all of them eventually are going to do, of course, as costs come down, the public is going to get increasingly nervous about these things. Before, people just had to worry about a drone flying over their property to spy on them or whatever else they thought it was up to. Mostly not spying on them, just people flying it through their neighborhood, of course. But now that we have Zoom-capable drones, you could be many houses away, higher up in the sky, and it's just a matter of time before this becomes an issue and people push for more regulations. Because that's what we need more of in our life. Regulations. We don't. While Kara hasn't yet said when this drone's going to be available, nor how much it's going to go for, but the Voyager 3 currently goes for $2,000 US, so that should give you a pretty clear idea there. You know, we live in exciting times. Drones haven't even been out, what, a couple years or so? And now we're getting Zoom options. Now, if they could just work on battery life, right? I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 92 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And of course, if you want to help support this show, check out freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. They've got a 30-day free trial for you. It would help you run your business so much better and get paid faster, and you've definitely got to check that out. Also, if you're considering going to that Out of New York conference that's coming up in October, don't forget that you can get $100 off that conference, which is a great, great deal, just by entering Sharky, that's S-H-A-R-K-Y, in the discount code section. If you're seriously considering going to that conference, get in on the early bird special and this $100 off right now and save a bunch of money. Seriously. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 93. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
This one, that is not the Digibee. Come on, airplane. Fly away. Go. No idea where you're going, but you're not going quickly enough. Got a podcast record here.